Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex Lav. One day later, Rex, it is clear we could not have been more wrong about what was going to happen at the 2024 President's Cup. It certainly seems like the only people on the planet who believe that this International President's Cup team could come back were, in fact, the members of the International President's Cup team. An unprecedented day here at Royal Montreal, where the score improbably, inconceivably, is now 5-5 heading into the weekend. New life for the internationals. Certainly some questions that need to be asked for the Americans. Rex, I know you're still buzzing from the action that unfolded here just a couple of minutes ago.
Unmitigated disaster. I believe that's what one of us said, since you just used the royal we to throw both of us under the bus. Yes, you said unmitigated disaster. I think I fell back on the cliche that, look, there was still 25 points to play for. And I will go ahead and betray some confidences here. I was in the bathroom earlier tonight getting ready for the press conference when a member of the international team walked in and we were having a conversation. I congratulated him for a really good day. And his immediate comeback was, you, being all of us in the media, had written us off. And to be clear, I don't think anybody had officially written that team off. But yes, in private circles, when we're sitting around over the last 24 hours, we certainly said it didn't look good for all the reasons I'm about to unfold. And look, this is going to be an alphabet soup of statistics. But the international side had not won that session, that format, alternate shot since 2005. Decades. We're talking about nearly
17 consecutive sessions they had lost in the alternate shot format.
And they had gotten swept on day one in the format that did favor them. In the history of this event, they have been outscored. They had been outscored by 33 points in that format. There was nothing in the body of work that suggested we were going to see this. And I think that's what I think that's the difference in this team. It's going to boil down to this team is just different. Adam Scott said he has a hard time putting it into words, but he just has a feeling. And he says he's had that feeling for a couple of weeks. I think there's a level of confidence on that team that we haven't seen certainly in recent years. At this event, I think the 13th man, which we talked a lot about on Wednesday in the preview podcast, factored into this. The crowd showed up today. Montreal, good for you. Chef's kiss. You guys were here for the team. You supported the team. They weren't. I mean, I'm trying to think what else you actually rifled through yesterday in the opening of the podcast, because you clearly were not happy with the way the day went. I'm going to turn it back on you. Unmitigated disaster on the other side this time?
Certainly some questions that need to be asked. I mean, full credit to the internationals. I don't think the Americans actually played all that poorly. You look at some of the margins of victory, 7-6, 5-4, 6-5. Like in foursomes, they basically, you look at what they accomplished on Friday, it almost matched like the number of blowouts they'd had in this format since this event started back in the mid-90s. Like just an unbelievable performance from the internationals a day after not making anything. It certainly seemed like they made everything. The column that I just interrupted to do this podcast that will soon be up on nbcsports.com/golf is the fact, Rex, like, what the heck is going on? Because everything we thought we knew about this President's Cup has been turned upside down. The fact that the internationals had said repeatedly that we're closer than ever to ending this two-decade run of misery, particularly when we look at the last two home games. 2015 in Korea came down to the last match. 2019 at Royal Melbourne, they were leading heading into singles. What happens on Thursday? They basically got ran off the course, swept to start for the first time in 24 years. Okay, you think you know that the Americans dominate in foursomes? They won 17 consecutive sessions. Their point differential was plus 33 since 2007. What happens? They don't just get beat. They don't just lose. They got skunked. It is the first time in the history of team competition in golf, President's Cup, Ryder Cup, Solheim Cup, that back-to-back days, back-to-back sessions were swept by opposing teams. And I think basically the premise of this podcast on Thursday, it was actually, that was the title of the podcast. Is this thing already over? Nope. It's 5-5. One of the most improbable days in what has historically been a lopsided rivalry. I'm super pumped for the weekend.
To be fair, and again, I was teasing you last night about this, but you were 40 minutes away from talking yourself into thinking that the internationals could win this. And after yesterday, you said, this is what happens when we have weeks and weeks to speculate and to twist the facts and to twist the statistics. But I think this boils down to what you just said. This is a different international team. Like, and again, there is still 20 points on the board. There's a lot of matches to be played, and that is a really, really good U.S. team. I mean, I think it was Jim Furyk who just referred to them as dogs. So I think he stole that from you. He said, I've got a bunch of dogs in that cabin, and they are going to come out swinging tomorrow. You can tell, I think, the same thing that happened to the international team on Thursday and got them coming out angry and focused on Friday. It's going to happen overnight to the U.S. team, and it's going to be a quick turnaround. There's going to be a 3:30 wake-up call. I do want to just touch base real quick. John, I'm going to mess this up. I apologize. Krikoska sent a very, very threatening email. Not threatening. Very, very angry email about how we seem to steer him in the wrong direction when it came to set day two of these matches, almost as if there was no reason to watch. If that was the message we sent, we apologize. And no, John, I am not going to be giving anyone stock tips.
I mean, I certainly think that's fair. I'm pretty sure I predicted a 9-1 American lead the F day two. That is obviously not the case here. I don't remember. It was probably something laughable as well that we should probably not revisit. I'm struck, Rex, by just how polar opposite these 2 days were. The internationals led for a total of 10 holes on Thursday. The Americans led for a total of one. They led for one hole on Friday. Hideki Matsuyama and Sung Jae Im. We said yesterday on the podcast, like if those two players together cannot win a point, it basically all is lost for the internationals. Those are the top 2 points earners, two of the best ball strikers you're ever going to find. They whipped the previously fearsome duo of Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. Made 6 consecutive birdies, an alternate shot at one point in 1, 7, and 6. Taylor Pendrith, who was actually the best player for the internationals on Friday, teamed up with Adam Scott, scored a 5-4 victory. Mackenzie Hughes and Corey Connors. You and I actually predicted this one, that this was going to go their way. These are guys who are longtime friends, former teammates. They played literally hundreds of practice rounds and matches throughout the year. Mackenzie Hughes' first ever President's Cup match, gave a pretty inspiring motivational speech on the team ride over, and all they did was lead the entire way, including jumping out to a 2-up lead early to cruise to a 6-5 victory. But I thought that there was sort of some pivotal moments from other contributors as well. I guess that's how you get a 5-0 sweep in this format. Jason Day, a couple of clutch up and downs, including on the 18th hole to preserve a full point there. Siwoo Kim, after Ben On's drive found the left rough into a pretty thick lie, made about a 15-footer on the final green to deny Scotty Scheffler and Russell Henley. A full team effort, speaks to the quality of this bunch. I think speaks to the character and the pride with which these players performed as well. I think it could have been easy for an Adam Scott, who has witnessed nothing but misery in this format, 11 consecutive defeats in the President's Cup, to think, oh, here we go again with a 5-0 loss. Instead, they showed the resolve. They showed the resilience. I think having overcome this deficit after one day, they have to feel bulletproof and like they're in a very good position to finally win the first President's Cup since 1998.
It was interesting last night during live from, and I think I said this, that I think the internationals were gone. They weren't in their cabin, and our live shot kind of backs up right to their cabins. But the U.S. team was clearly still in their cabin, and there was hooting and hollering and a lot of screaming. And I'm not going to say it was a celebration, but they were clearly feeling themselves, as they should, after a day one sweep. I am going to be so fascinated tomorrow morning, because you look at how these matches have sort of come together. And I did ask both captains, Mike Weir and Jim Furyk, you had a blueprint coming in. You always do. How did that change going into Thursday? And how did that change going into Friday? And do you have any adjustments? And both of them said no to Thursday and Friday, but yes to Saturday. And this is when it kind of gets fun, because you start to get a handle of, all right, you had some ideas about your team. You had some ideas of exactly who you wanted to pair together, but now you can factor form into that. And we have seen just some amazing performances. You said Hideki Matsuyama played the best. No, statistically, that was Corey Connors. He picked up over 4 strokes total on the entire field. And I just think it's an amazing pairing to put him and Matt Hughes together, because there's a lot of reasons I think the crowds got behind this team today. Probably the biggest one is I think there was actually a lot more people on the golf course today. But there's also something to be said for there were so many international flags on the board early and often. And you had Hideki just running away with a big lead. You could sit and celebrate that. You had Adam Scott and Pendrith, who we both thought was going to be a really good pairing, running away and just building these huge leads. It was an impressive performance all the way around.
I think just the tone was set differently. It seemed like there was more people. It literally seemed like there was tens of thousands more folks at Royal Montreal. And keep in mind, yeah, it was a little bit dreary. It was a little bit wet. It was a little bit cold to start Thursday. But like the number of people on property certainly seemed to be significantly more on Friday. I think the tone around the first tee was dramatically different as well. Everything down to the set list and what the DJ was playing. It was just more inspiring. It was just more energetic. And I think you saw that permeate through the entire international team, who jumped out to leads in every single match and poured it on from there. Rex, let's look ahead to Saturday, because different format. It's going to be a doubleheader day. We no longer have five matches per session. You have four matches, doubleheader day, starting at, oh my God, 7:02 a.m. local time. That is going to lead to a very long day for the players here. Let's go match by match and what you think is potentially going to happen. I'm just pulling it up here. Forgive me, but it's going to be
I can do it. Scotty Scheffler and Colin Morikawa in the day's first match. And that, as you pointed out, that goes off at 7:02 Eastern time against Adam Scott and Taylor Kindreth. I think we've already addressed both those are really strong. I think both captains wanted to get off to a fast start. In the second pairing, you had Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele. Again, a really good pairing on Thursday that they didn't play together on Friday, going up against Corey Connors and Mac Hughes, which I think that's going to be another really good match.
All right, let's do these. Let's do these one by one here. So, Scotty Scheffler and Colin Morikawa. First time that these two players have been paired together in team competition. First thing that jumps out is my goodness, those are two of the best iron players on the planet. As good as Russell Henley looked on Thursday, it didn't quite have it on the greens on Friday. I mean, Colin Morikawa, generational iron player. Scotty Scheffler has sort of assumed that mantle over the past couple of years. That is just going to be such a difficult team to get rid of if you are the international team. Again, this is four balls, going back to four balls on Saturday morning. You have to like their chances. I know Taylor Pendleton is playing well for the internationals. I know Adam Scott is determined as a veteran at age 44 to get another one of these. If Scotty Scheffler and Colin Morikawa lose, I would be very surprised. That like is as tough of a American duo as you could possibly get.
As I just said, Furyk said he had made some adjustments to his lineup, what he wanted to do on Saturday. Weir said the same thing about his lineup. It makes sense. My guess is Colin Morikawa playing with Scotty Scheffler is a bit of an adjustment. And I don't think there was anything wrong per se with that Scotty Scheffler, Russell Henley, because we gushed about how good they played together on day one. And they actually played really well on day two. But I think Furyk probably wants to get just throw a different look at them. And you're right. If you put those two together in that particular format, they should, in theory, on paper, be dominant. I love the energy that Adam Scott is bringing to this. And I'm not going to sit here and say that he didn't bring the energy the last 10 matches. And that's why the international side has won. But it's clear he has taken on a leadership role on that team. And he's bought into the passion. We saw it a lot today from those young players. And Tom Kim didn't even play today. But I just think the energy, the excitement that these young players bring, he's feeding off that.
One of those players, even if he is not particularly young, is Mac Hughes. I called him an early pick to be the dog of the week for the internationals. I think that played out. Didn't just help the internationals to a 6-5 win, but high-fiving fans, leading cheers, pumping up his teammates. Like, he was everything you ever want in a teammate. He will be going out early once again with his longtime partner in Corey Connors going up against Tony Finau and Xander Schauffele. How do you see that one playing out, and who do you give the edge to?
To be clear, I just want you to stop pestering me about this. I never said that Mac Hughes wasn't going to be a dog, so please stop this nonsense. I'm not on that side. I'm not that guy. Maybe it was Nota Begay. I don't know who said it. It was fun to watch Mac Hughes and Corey Connors, and it probably shouldn't be a huge surprise that those two played well together, and they're going to be paired probably for both matches, I would guess, tomorrow. They went to Kent State together. They're former roommates together. They're close. They're both playing really well. But we saw on day one, Tony Finau and Xander Schauffele. That's a good pairing. I think that might be the match of the morning.
I would agree with you on that one. Match three is another rehash for the Americans, at least. Keegan Bradley and Wyndham Clark, who were winners on day one, going up against the Kims, Siwoo Kim, who again hold the par putt on the 18th hole to win a full point on Friday, alongside Tom Kim, who I think to many people's surprise sat out on Friday. Would expect him to go both sessions on Saturday. How do you see that one playing out?
I like Keegan Bradley and Wyndham Clark on day one. I really did. There was a lot of passion. It was a lot of fun to watch Keegan Bradley after being away from this for a decade, sort of reengage and going in. It makes going into next year's Ryder Cup that much more enjoyable because you see what kind of captain he's going to be with the way he played. I just think Siwoo Kim and Tom Kim are going to come out firing. And I think Tom Kim probably has a little bit to prove after losing on day one, not playing on day two. He's probably got a lot of pent-up frustration. So I can see that one going the international's way.
I can as well. Keegan Bradley made six putts longer than 10 feet in the opening round. Wyndham Clark statistically was the worst player on the golf course on Friday. You look at Tom Kim and Siwoo Kim. That, of course, was the inspired pairing from Quail Hollow in 2022 that sort of reignited the internationals when they were down 8-2 and made it at least somewhat of a ball game on Sunday. In the anchor match, once again, the American duo we saw on Thursday, Patrick Cantlay and Sam Burns, taking on the team that boat raced Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele on Friday. That is, of course, Hideki Matsuyama and Sung Jae-im. What are your thoughts on that?
Which Hideki's going to show up on Saturday morning? Is it going to be the one that picked up over three strokes on the green and pretty much had eight birdies on his own ball on Friday, or is it going to be the one we saw on Thursday? It seemed to be a little bit flat. It didn't seem to be his normal, at least ball striking self. He can be a little spotty putter at times. If the Friday guy shows up, I don't like Cantlay and Sam Burns' chances. And they did play well on Thursday. They were part of that juggernaut that went and swept the international team. But I think this is going to hinge on which one of the Hidekis shows up.
You mentioned which Hideki is going to show up. I'm curious which Patrick Cantlay is going to show up. He was the American's best player on Thursday. He was the second worst player on Friday. He's such a steady, consistent player. I know it has not been his best season for Patrick Cantlay, but he certainly plays better than he did on Friday. I still like Hideki Matsuyama and Sung Jae-im in that one. So I guess if I'm just looking at this big picture, Rex, like I see maybe a split, if not an edge, to the internationals, which I think 24 hours ago, I would have had a hard time believing that they could actually be leading heading into Saturday foursomes. But that's exactly how I think I'm envisioning this.
If I told you on our car ride home last night that you and I would be having lunch on Saturday and this thing would be tied, you would have thrown something at me, wouldn't you?
I mean, probably so. But but like this is, I think, a realistic possibility that the internationals could now be leading into Saturday foursomes. And if you're the Americans, don't you now have some doubt? Keep in mind, this is virtually the same U.S. team that was wiped out 7-1 in foursomes in Rome last year at the Ryder Cup. Now you're coming off a 5-0 sweep. This has historically been the best format because of the best iron players since 2007 in this President's Cup. The Americans probably need to have a lead heading into Saturday afternoon if they want to feel good about their chances all of a sudden.
I mean, certainly based on what happened today, I would agree with that. And if you, again, we had this conversation 12 hours ago, I would have rolled my eyes and thought, well, it doesn't really matter one way or the other because the international side has been abysmal when it comes to alternate shot. They were dominant. They weren't just good. They weren't just serviceable. They weren't just solid. They were dominant on day two. And that, to me, is the most shocking part of this. And I was going to do a column tonight on golfchannel.com and NBCSports.com/golf. On just the idea of starting to second guess. Hindsight's always a beautiful thing when you're a writer because you can always pick apart every decision a captain has made. I decided against that because there is still is time for both captains to sort of right the ship. However, I am going to lean into something that you and I have talked a lot about, the idea that Max Homa is on this team. He didn't play on day one in the format that he probably should have played in, given how poorly he has played this season. You put him in a four ball, you give him a little feel good. Give him a safety blanket with a partner that, okay, if you miss a fairway, your partner's got you. You put him in alternate shot in a very crucial position, and he didn't play well at all. It started with the first tee shot. He missed the fairway. They made a bogey. Suddenly they were one down, and it just kept piling up as we went along. He's going to sit tomorrow. My guess is he will sit in the afternoon as well.
Ooh, that would be a gut punch. Max Homa, at least with his iron play, I thought, was pretty solid. Didn't have the huge miss save for the first hole when he was about, 25, 30 yards left, took out a woman. Hopefully that spectator is okay. I did think he hit some pretty good iron shots down the stretch to at least give them a chance. Brian Harman could not make much of anything on the greens. I do think if the Americans get behind heading into the afternoon session, Jim Ferry is certainly going to have a difficult choice to make. I did not think Max Homa played bad. Max Homa was not the reason why they lost that match.
They lost to what you and I can sit here and debate.
Oh, it was the weakest. That was absolutely the weakest international team.
They lost when the international team put one, not just one, but two balls in the water coming down the stretch. Two out of the last three holes they essentially gave to the American side, and they still lost. You cannot sit here and tell me that Max Homa had a good day. I'm not buying that.
Max stuffed it on 13. Max stuffed it on 17. Again, he was the second best player statistically for the Americans on Friday. I think that is probably going to be reason enough for Jim Furyk to send him out there. Again, he and Brian Harman, at least historically,
lost strokes on the green.
In the international.
He lost strokes on the green.
So did the internationals on Thursday. What do they do a day later? That sort of thing tends to be a little bit finicky. Okay, Rex, after Saturday, there will be 18 points on the board. How do you see it?
After Saturday, that will be interesting because I think you and I both agree we probably see a split coming out of the morning session. And again, historically, the afternoons have all gone to the Americans in that particular format. But I think today opened up an entirely new paradigm. I think it's almost impossible to imagine a scenario that it could go the other way, that suddenly the Americans could sweep the alternate shot in the afternoon. I know this is chalk. It's going right down the middle, but I can envision a tie going into Sunday.
Ooh, that certainly would be delicious. I see
I don't
a tie.
Think it's going to be more than one or two point difference.
Yeah, I probably see a slight edge to the internationals. 9.5 to 8.5, 10-8, 9-9, somewhere around that vicinity. Again, you and I have been wrong before. We'll be wrong again.
Sorry, John.
It certainly could happen here Saturday at the President's Cup. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Ladd. You guys on the drill. NBCSports.com/golf. I'll have a story up on the improbable day that was here at Royal Montreal. Rex, of course, is writing about how this finally felt like a home game for the International President's Cup team. Hope you guys enjoy both of those pieces. Rex and I will be back on Saturday night for a full recap of day three at the President's Cup. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys after a long day Saturday at the President's Cup.